I want you to open your Bible, if you would, tonight. Let's begin in Job chapter 1. Tonight we're going to do more reading than anything. I want you to allow entrance, the wisdom of God, the things of God. Listen to what God is saying through this account of Job. I hear so many people at times, they'll make comments, oh, you know, I just love Job. It reminds me of Job. I try to have the attitude of Job, you know. I don't think so. Job was in a unique situation, and his attitude wasn't the best. It started off, but as time grew, it didn't end up the best. But I want you to see something, and I saw something real quick here in Job chapter 1. We know how the devil had inquired of God, and he'd ask of God to permit him to touch Job's life. Because Job would curse you, because the only reason Job had it easy, the only reason Job hadn't cursed him. So God allows Satan to sift him, to attack different things. But I want you to notice something in attitude, and something that makes me wonder, what are we missing? Look at chapter 1, beginning in verse 13. Now on the day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, a messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans attacked and took them. They also slew the servants with the edge of a sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Verse 16. While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you." I want to stop for just 1 second. You know, you can imagine enemies attacking and taking your animals. But Satan's second attack, the servant saw a fire from God. That was what he thought. And this fire from God, he said, this fire from God of God fell from heaven and it burned up. Now what would you be thinking? How could this disaster happen? Verse 18. While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "Your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And behold, a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they died, and I alone have escaped to tell you." A wind. You know, perhaps tornadic. We don't know. But something, another act of God working through nature. Look at verse 20. Then Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head and fell on the ground and worshiped. That's what I want you to see. How could you have such tragedies with no explanation, and you fell to the ground and worshiped? What does Job have that we don't? That's why I said at the beginning that, you know, when people go through things, well, they think of Job. We're not hardly like Job. When we have conflict, when we have a disaster, to lose all of your children as well as your livestock, and you fall and worship, what would we do? Worship would be one of the last things on our mind. We would be in such grief and such grief-stricken. We couldn't even move. We couldn't do anything. And I'm sitting here and I'm looking at this. He fell to the ground and worshiped. Oh, how far do we really have to go? How far has our faith really come? Where we see all things rooted in God, even the bad, and we worship. That tells us something about Job and what he had a hold of. And what we don't have a hold of, I'm afraid. And I'm not trying to be down and negative on us, but I'm saying we haven't come where we think we've come sometimes. Because when we have a death in the family, we can't worship. When we have a tragedy that hits our lives, we don't think of worship. Well, look at 21. He said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Right there, there's your worship. Blessed be the name. Through all of this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. A man of God. That's who he was. Well, what ends up happening, their three friends of his have heard of the tragedies. And not only that, Satan began his attack on the body of Job, and we know the boils from the top of the head to the soles of his feet. And he'd have to take this sheep herd scraper. He'd have to scrape those boils open just to get relief. I can't even imagine. I can't imagine. And he was hurting. And so when his three friends show up, 7 days and seven nights, no one says a word. What are you going to say to Job? What are you going to tell him in all of this? And he says they saw his pain was very great. And then Job opened his mouth. And he began to talk. But in his three friends, and we're not going to go through all of these things. We're going to go over to chapter 32. You can go ahead and turn over there. That was read moments ago. Eliphaz was the main spokesman of his three friends. And Eliphaz, he was a dissector. He reasoned everything. And in his reasonings, he criticized Job. And even though Eliphaz would say some right things about God, because of his dissecting mentality, he offered Job no help. And then you have the second friend, Bildad. Now, Bildad was a little bit different temperament. Bildad was an arguer. He was more argumentative with Job, and he would charge Job, "You're not blameless. God wouldn't bring this on you if you weren't without fault." And then you have the third friend, Zophar. Zophar was self-righteous. He was pharisaical in his attitude toward Job. And in his pharisaical, he thought himself above Job. And even though he said some right things about God, he didn't help much either. And you know what we learn from these? Just the men. And you go through and you can read it through an account. You know, a lot of times when people are going through troubles and difficulties, you better be careful of the advice you give them. A lot of times people are not given good advice. They're given worldly advice. They're given advice that may talk of God, but it's not speaking for God. And that's dangerous because it sets you up in a dangerous relationship with God. Be careful what you say to people when they're in trouble. Well, in chapter 32, we finally have Elihu. He's a fourth fella, the youngest of them all. And Elihu, he shows great respect in 32. Look at verse 1. "Then these three men ceased answering Job because he was righteous in his own eyes." Now, how was Job in this deal? Where does he end up? He's righteous in his own eyes. Verse 2. "But the anger of Elihu, the son of Barshel, the Buzite, of the family of Ram, burned Against Job, his anger burned because he justified himself before God. Elihu didn't have any place for this. You can't justify your actions. You can't justify your reasons. Verse 3. And his anger burned against his three friends because they had found no answer and yet they condemned Job. There's your being careful. Verse 5. And when Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of the three men, his anger burned. You know, Elihu is showing respect for a young man. Elihu is showing a lot of character. And here's why. Look at verse 6. So Elihu, the son of Barshel, the Buzite, spoke out and said, I am young in years and you are old. Therefore I was shy and afraid to tell you what I think. I thought age should speak and increased years should teach wisdom. But it is a spirit in a man and the breath of the Almighty that gives understanding. Oh. You know what Elihu patterned his life after? Even though Peter hadn't lived yet, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 5, Peter writes and he says, you younger men, you need to be subjected to your elders, and all of you, clothe yourself with humility toward one another. For God is opposed to the proud. He gives grace to the humble. He was clothing himself in humility, being the youngest of them all. And so here he realizes, and this is a lesson we can take from this. He says in verse 7 and 8, I thought age should speak and increased years should teach wisdom, but it is the spirit in man and the breath of the Almighty that gives them understanding. You know why you need to walk with God? With a pure heart. You know why you need to learn how to listen to the word of the Lord? Understanding does not come from books. It doesn't come from smarts. Spiritual understanding comes from God Almighty Himself. You can't, it's not book learning. Understanding comes from God, and you have to walk with God where God lives if you're going to get it, and it takes humility. God is opposed to the proud. Elihu is angry at Job. His anger burned at the three men. Why? Because they were all arrogant and they were getting nothing from God to help Job in his situation, and Job wasn't getting anything. God is opposed to the proud. And Elihu knows that. You know, you would think increased years would give wisdom. But that is not true. It is not true. Look at verse 9. The abundance in years may not be wise, nor may elders understand justice. So I say, listen to me and I'll tell you what I think. I have known many for many years in Christ Jesus, and they may have been in Jesus for 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, and they're still on the same level of thinking and teaching that they were when you knew them at the beginning. They've gained nothing more. Years do not equate to wisdom and understanding. And we need to understand that. Wisdom and understanding, they come from you and your relationship of walking with the Lord. Being humble and being able to take direction. And so, Elihu, he's doing well. He's doing well as a young man. Look at verse 11. Behold, I waited for your words. I listened to your reasonings while you pondered what to say. I even paid close attention to you. Indeed, there was no one who refuted Job, not one of you who answered his words. Do not say we found wisdom. God will rout him, not man. For he has not arranged his words against me, nor will I reply to him with your arguments. I want you to notice one thing in these statements of Elihu. He said, I paid close attention, verse 12, I paid close attention to you. Did you know that's what Jesus said? In Luke 8:18, Jesus said, take care how you listen. That is something I'm trying to get so much better at. You need to take care how you listen. He paid close attention to what they were saying. Many times when we're dealing with people, many times when we're in conversations with people, you know what we're doing? We're thinking about an answer even before they get through speaking. We're thinking ahead of time, and that's not wise. You need to listen and pay close attention to what's being said so you can have something to offer that's wise. Take care how you listen. So, you know, Elihu, he's not swayed by any of their age, and he's sure not swayed by any of their thinking. He's standing on his own 2 feet. Well, come over with me to chapter 33, and we're just going to hit just a few verses here, and I'll let the lesson be yours. In chapter 33, verse 13, Elihu continues, and notice, and this is kind of the section, this statement kind of tells us what the whole section of conversation is about. He says in verse 13, why do you complain against him, God, that he does not give an account of all of his doings? You know why people complain? You know why people question God? Because they're asking God to give an account. And that's what Elihu wants to know with Job. Why are you complaining? You don't understand, Elihu. I lost my children. I lost everything that I owned as far as the material animals that I need to live. I lost it all. Elihu, you don't understand. Oh, Elihu says, oh, yes, I do. Who in the world, why are you complaining against God? Like God owes you an explanation. And many times we do that in life. We act like God owes us. We act like sometimes that, you know, God, why are you causing this to happen? Why did you let this happen? Why this? Why that? God owes an explanation. And that's what this section speaks of. Come on down to verse 29. Behold, God does all these things often with men. And what he talks about when he's talking about all these things, he's talking about the way God communicates, the way God lets man know things that are going on. And so he says in 29, behold, God does all these things oftentimes with men to bring back his soul from the pit that he may be enlightened with the light of life. Pay attention, O Job. Listen to me. Keep silent and let me speak. Pay attention. Elihu said, I paid attention to your words and you've had nothing to offer, none of you. Now you better pay attention to me. God's trying to get a message to you. You're not listening. You're not paying attention. All you're doing is asking why from God. Verse 32, then if you have anything to say, answer me. Speak, for I desire to justify you. If not, listen to me. Keep silent, and I will teach you wisdom. God wants to help. God has never desired to hurt His people. Really, not anyone. The problem is everybody's talking and nobody's listening to God in His communication. A lot of times things happen just simply to keep your feet on the path and not question the situation. Just let it be. And listen. That's what he wants. Come over to chapter 34. Look at verse 10. He's speaking now to the three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. Therefore, listen to me, you men of understanding. Far be it from God to do wickedness and from the Almighty to do wrong. For He pays a man according to his work, and He makes him find it according to His way. Surely God will not act wickedly, and the Almighty will not pervert justice. Who gave Him authority over the earth? And who has laid on Him the whole world? If He should determine to do so, if He should gather to Himself His spirit and His breath, all flesh would perish together, and man would return to dust. Don't you ever accuse God of wickedness. It's not part of Him. Don't you ever accuse God to doing wrong. He can't and He won't. Where are you coming up with that? When bad things happen and someone turns around and they say, why is God doing this? Why are you blaming God for evil? There is a devil. And he's trying to make things look like they're coming from God. And when in the whole time, God, you're in Isaac's existence depends on God. What if God took His breath right now? Instantly we'd all be gone. We'd be in eternity. Don't you say God perverts justice. Don't you ever question God is at fault in this thing. Well, the point of all of chapter 34, if you want to break it down to one point, is this. Elihu is telling Job and his friends, God is always just. And don't you question it. Well, come down to 21 of chapter 34. Let's move down. For His eyes are upon the ways of a man. He sees all his steps. There's no darkness or deep shadow where the workers of iniquity may hide themselves. For He does not need to consider a man further that he should go up before God in judgment. He breaks in pieces mighty men without inquiry and sets others in their place. Therefore He knows their works, and He overthrows them in the night, and they are crushed. Bottom line, nothing's hidden from the sight of God. He sees it all. Man's not getting by with anything. Man can't hide. And that's what Job lets him know. You think all this stuff's done over here in secret? No. God's aware. He sees it all. But then as we continue, look at chapter 35. Look at verse 9. And this message again, beginning in verse 9, is going to be God as opposed to the proud. He's going to show what He does. 35:9. Because of the multitudes of oppressions, they cry out. They cry out for help because of the arm of the mighty, talking about men. But no one says, where is God my Maker, who gives songs in the night, who teaches us more than the beasts of the earth, and who makes us wiser than the birds of the heavens? There they cry out, but He does not answer. Because of the pride of evil men. You want to make sure your prayers are heard? Then don't you act arrogant. And isn't it sad sometimes that we, brethren, act like we know it all? That we come and we, you know, here we are tonight and you know, we're going through verses, we're going through things that are familiar. Now, maybe not all of these words are familiar, but we're familiar with Job. And so we sit and we think we know it. And then all of a sudden, one day, something happens. And you cry out, God, where are you? And God says, I don't respond because you're arrogant. You wouldn't listen back here. And now, why should I respond now? One of the greatest lessons to learn is that God is opposed to the proud. Look at verse 13. Surely God will not listen to an empty cry, nor will the Almighty regard it. Surely he won't do that, will he? You got pride. Yeah, he'll do it. Verse 14. How much less when you say you do not behold him? The case is before him, and you must wait for him. There it is. There it is. Penned and sandwiched in all of this speaking, one little statement, and you got to pay attention to get it. Verse 14. You must wait for God. No matter what you're going through, no matter how difficult things are, a lot of times things aren't explained. There's not a definite reason. Sometimes we just don't know what's happening. You know what you need to do? You need to wait for God. If you're that, if you've got the relationship, you know you're in a safe position with Him, then wait for God. Don't question Him. Don't call Him into account. Don't ask Him to give you a reason. Simply wait. And that's what Elihu, that's what he gives them. You know, the case is before Him. God's aware of what happened back here. He knows everything Satan did. And so Elihu doesn't know. But you know what he does know? You must wait for Him. Be patient and wait. Stop questioning these things. We'll look down at chapter 36. Look at verse 22. He says, behold, God is exalted in His power. Who is a teacher like Him? Who has appointed Him His way? And who has said, you have done wrong? Anybody in here teach God anything? Is there anybody ever existed on the face of the earth that ever taught God, this is how it should be done, God? Boy, if I were you, this is how I... Who's His teacher? And especially if you know God is a God of justice. You know, you can hold to that. Look at verse 26. Behold, God is exalted and we do not know Him. The number of His years is unsearchable. For He draws up the drops of water, they distill rain from the mists. Which the clouds pour down, they drip upon man abundantly. Can anyone understand the spreading of the clouds, the thundering of His pavilion? Behold, He spreads His lightning about Him. He covers the depths of the sea. For by these He judges peoples. He gives food in abundance. He covers His hands with a lightning and commands it to strike the mark. Its noise declares His presence. The cattle also concerning what is coming up. Boy, isn't that an incredible thought? You know why I need to wait for God and listen? Next time you have a thunderstorm come through, and your bed fills with children, that lightning and that thunder declares the presence of God. How do we see it? We don't see it that way. Oh, it's scary. These storms are scary. God just says, I'm making My presence known. And I'm greater than man and have no accountability to you. And He continues this, and let's read the first 13 verses of 37, and we're going to end with this. Listen to the power of God. At this also my heart trembles and leaps from its place. Listen closely to the thunder of His voice and the rumbling that goes out of His mouth. Under the whole heaven He lets it loose, and His lightning to the ends of the earth. After it, a voice roars. He thunders with His majestic voice, and He does not restrain the lightning when His voice is heard. God thunders with His voice wondrously, doing great things which we cannot comprehend. For to the snow He says, fall on the earth, and to the downpour and rain, be strong. He seals the hands of every man, that all men may know his work. Then the beasts go into the lair. It remains in its den. Out of the south comes the storm, out of the north the cold. From the breath of God, ice is made, and the expanse of the waters is frozen. Also with moisture, he loads the thick cloud. He disperses the cloud of his lightning. It changes direction, turning around by his guidance, that it may do whatever he commands it on the face of the inhabited earth. Whether for correction or for his world or for loving kindness, he causes it to happen. Oh, those are incredible verses teaching about God and direction on this earth. And Elihu, he's taking little Job here and he says, you need to stop justifying yourself and acting like you know all the answers. And you need to pay attention to God. And you need to see God's purposes. And when you don't understand what's going on, it's all before God. He knows it. Just wait on Him. Just wait on Him. And pay attention to the way things are created, and pay attention to the ice that forms. Here we are in winter, you know, and we didn't have it as much this year, but the ice that forms on the lakes and things like that, we look at it, and it's kind of incredible. And he said, that's the breath of God. My parents, teach your children. Teach your children where all these things come from. And then may we all return, and we listen to what David said in Psalm 46:10. Cease striving and know I'm God. And may God be glorified through the way we live. And may we be humble through the difficulties that arise. And may we ever listen for His voice to speak to us through His Word. And the next time heartache hits, will you worship your God? Oh, that's a tough one. But that takes faith.